And we're sure that the Lord will indeed bless us as together we continue our studies on the character of Daniel. And our subject this morning is, of course, resisting the pressure to conform. And with that in mind, we are going to read briefly in chapter 1 of the book of Daniel. I am assuming, of course, that you've done your homework and read the chapter, and we can only read selectively. Chapter 1 and verse number 6. Now among these were children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's food, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and compassion with the prince of the eunuchs. Verse 16, then Belshazzar took away the portion of their food and the wine that they should drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king conversed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king, in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them. He found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. We trust that the Lord will indeed add his rich blessing to this reading from his precious word today. Now the recent events that have been transpiring in Europe have shocked every one of us, I'm sure. We've all watched our televisions with amazement as we've seen the terrible horrors of ethnic cleansing being inflicted upon a people down yonder in Kosovo. We've watched old people in their 80s trundling along in wheelbarrows, and children and parents on the back of tractors, and the unspeakable horrors that they've all been able to tell about, the men all being taken outside and shot round the back and so on and so forth. And we've all stood there amazed at the capacity that man has to inflict cruelty on his fellow man. And looking at these things, we've all felt so helpless and hopeless at the tremendous atrocities that have been happening down in that area of the world. Now, the chapter that we have read this morning was written against a similar type of background. Daniel had been up yonder in Judah with his friends, and life was going on quite comfortably. They had their temple, they had their priesthood, they recognized their holy days, they celebrated their sacrifices, and so on. And everything was going very, very well. And suddenly, Nebuchadnezzar unleashed his armies from Babylon all the way over into Judah, and he descended upon Judah, and he absolutely devastated the place. He destroyed the temple, he killed so many of the priests, he destroyed their houses, and he took them all and drove them, just like these people in Kosovo you've been seeing on your television, the very same sort of repeat performance. He drove them across the desert to Babylon as prisoners of war in order that he might hold them there and to have them under his control. And of course, the fact that this was taking place under the disciplinary hand of God, because the exile to Babylon was something that God had intended. God intended that he should be taken there for 70 years, according to the prophecy of Jeremiah, because these people had refused to keep the Sabbath for the land, And for 490 years they had refused to give the land its rest every 7 years. And so God said, well, I'm going to give the land its rest all in one go. And for 70 years you're going to go down to Babylon. And down there they went. The fact that it was all under the disciplinary hand of God didn't exempt men like Daniel, who were godly men, from the impact of that kind of discipline. And Daniel and other people like him, who were men of God, were also taken along with the mass of the people down yonder into Babylon. And one could well imagine them throwing their hands up and saying, well, is it really worthwhile living for God now? Amidst all the chaos and the violence and the destruction that we've seen in our lives, and our temple has gone and our priests have gone, why should we bother living for God anymore in this kind of world? We'll adopt the philosophy, when in Babylon, do as the Babylonians do, and it will be much more comfortable for us. That would have been a philosophy that would have been very easy to adopt, and which would have had certain advantages to them as far as their stay in Babylon was concerned. And so we want to look this morning at the way in which Daniel conducted himself in these early days. Now remember, we're not dealing with a man in his 50s. We're dealing with a kid, you might say, of 16 or 17. And sometimes we underestimate our young people, you know. And you look at this young man and the spiritual stamina and strength and commitment to his faith and to his God that he had amazes us. And we forget sometimes that he was only 16 or 17. And so we want to look at the way that Daniel conducted himself in Babylon and to look at some of the lessons that we can learn not only for teenagers, but for all of us as we live our lives in a world system that is opposed to God, that is all around us. Now, the first chapter of the book of Daniel gives us a very unique insight into the Babylonian brainwashing machine, if you like. You see, the children of Israel had come down to Babylon, and among them were certain young men with tremendous abilities, outstanding kind of men, young men, outstanding caliber, young men with a tremendous potential. Now, this didn't escape the notice of Nebuchadnezzar. He was no fool. And he realized that this was a tremendous asset that he had at his disposal. And he was intent on exploiting that asset to his own advantage. And taking these young men who had come down into Babylon and implementing his plan for their lives, so that they would fit in with what Babylon would like them to be. And he was intent on making certain changes. You see, the problem with these people who came down from Judah was this, that they had all sorts of hang-ups, you know, about the law, and about the diet, and the priests, and the holy days, and all their observances. They had all these hang-ups. And if these young men were going to be of any tremendous benefit to Babylon, they were going to have to wipe the slate clean and start all over again. They were going to have to indoctrinate them and bring them to a position where they forgot all that nonsense that they were accustomed to culturally right yonder in Judah, and be able to fit in with the Babylonian system. And this is exactly what Nebuchadnezzar had in mind when these young people came down into Babylon. And he began to implement a process of change, a brainwashing process that would change them from what they were to what he wanted them to be, from what God wanted them to be to what Nebuchadnezzar wanted them to be. And we want to look at the techniques, because the techniques of the world have never really changed. We want to look at the sort of processes that they tried on these young men to, in order to bring about changes in them. And of course they can affect us all in a variety of ways. First of all, there was the selection process. Nebuchadnezzar spoke to the prince of the eunuchs, and he said to him, "Now listen, I want you to look at these young men who have come down from Babylon very, very carefully. I want you to go through a full selection process. I want you to go through a process of elimination. And there are certain criteria that you must adhere to. First of all, the people that you're going to select have to be of the royal line. Secondly, they have to be handsome in their appearance. They have to be good-looking young men. And also, they have to have an outstanding academic record. It says, well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and gifted in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability." You see, he's looking for people with brains, you see. He's looking for people with an outstanding intelligence, with a high intelligence quotient. And he's going to go through a selection process that will eliminate most of the people and leave him with the very, very best. And so the process began. And Daniel and his companions passed all the tests. And at the end of a selection process that must have involved hundreds of people, they were the ones who were chosen. They were selected. They were given the honor of being selected from among all these people in order to be able to serve in the civil service of Babylon. Quite an honor, really, eh? To have a sophisticated civilization like Babylon, with all its power, flatter you with selecting you for special treatment and recognizing your special abilities, and that you've got the potential for having a great career, and you've been chosen by that system. I could have quite well imagined that all this could have went to their head, you know. And they could just have become clay in the hands of the Babylonian conformity process, eh? And just fell into line with anything. I mean, the flattery of being chosen and selected from amongst all these others, of their peers. Absolutely amazing. I want to say that the world today hasn't changed. The world today is still looking for people with the kind of qualifications that were specified at that particular time. The world is still looking for people who have exceptional intellectual capabilities. Young men and young women who have an outstanding academic career. Young men and women who can carry themselves well, handsome in appearance, and who have a dignified bearing. The world puts a great priority on that sort of thing, and is prepared to select people like that and give them special treatment. And the world will make every attempt, however subtly, to mold people like that into their form so that they will suit their purposes well. I want just to say to anyone here in the meeting today who is still in the business world, and I dare say the majority of us are in some realm or other, that we have to be very, very careful about the world's selection processes. and to be very careful that we do not allow ourselves to be flattered by them, because they can heap honors on you like you wouldn't believe. They can. And we have to be aware of that, because the sting in all of this is that there will be a spiritual penalty attached to it, as we'll see, that involves compromising your faith and your commitment to the Lord. And that can happen whether you're 17 or whether you're 50 or 40 or whatever. The world can have its processes working in your life and with a view to forming you in their particular mold. The fact of the matter is that God has already chosen us. Never mind about the world choosing us. God has already chosen us. And He has plans for us. And God's plans for us should be allowed to run their course in our lives. And where there is a conflict between the plan that God has for our life and the plan that the world has for our life, we should learn to reject the world's plan and to go with God's plan. And we have to remember the exhortation of the apostle as he wrote to the Romans in Romans chapter 12. He said to them, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." Don't allow your mind to be warped and twisted into the mold of the world around you. Now, after the selection process had run its course, and these young men had been identified, and I'm sure that there was a certain amount of self-satisfaction in the fact that they had been chosen, the machine moves now into high gear. And they were chosen, according to the Babylonian system, for special treatment. And this involved, at the start, a dietary change. And the king evidently had a certain supply of wine and meat every day. And these young people who were selected were also to partake of the king's table. They were favored enough to be on the same sort of level when it came to their diet. Again, a tremendous flattery to be partaking of the same kind of food that Nebuchadnezzar ate, the same stuff that went up there to the palace, is the same stuff that these young men were to be offered. Unfortunately, there was a problem. This meat had first to be offered to the gods of Babylon. And after it had been offered to the gods of Babylon, it then went to the king's table. And so there was compromise as far as their god was concerned in eating this food that had been offered to idols. And apart from that, the food that they were going to be offered did not conform to the prohibitions and the preparations of the Levitical law that were strictly enforced in Judah. Now, I could imagine someone saying, "Listen, Daniel, why bother about the law? Now, who cares? Who cares now? You're down in Babylon. Forget it. Live in the real world. The temple's gone, all the prohibitions and preparations, they don't really matter now." But you know what Daniel's name means? God is my judge. Never mind who's keeping an eye on me. Never mind who's checking up on me. God is my judge. And Daniel stood before God along with his companions, and no matter where he was, and no matter what the circumstances were, he was going to comply with God's law and honor God no matter where he was. He was going to behave the same in Babylon as he did in Jerusalem. There was going to be no compromise. You know, the time to take a stand for God is right at the start of any change in your life. Daniel and his companions were put on the spot right at the very start. Before they had hardly got their feet in Babylon, they were put on the spot. And this could have caught them off balance. But they realized the importance of taking a stand for God right at the very start. Because if they didn't take a stand at the start, it would be downhill from then on. And I want to say to us all today, as we face different situations in our lives, and as we find ourselves maybe in our jobs in a new situation, or at school in a different situation, very, very important that we should, what is it the old brethren used to say, nail our colors to the mast. That's what they used to say. It's very, very important to do that right at the very start. Listen, it saves you a lot of problems. And it saves a lot of trouble later on to make sure that people know exactly where you stand right at the very start. And Daniel didn't say, well, it's a bit early to start objecting, you know. I mean, we're just here and we've been selected by this flattering process. Let's give them a break. Let's give them a chance. Let's see how it works out. No, he didn't. Daniel saw the challenge to his faith and the compromise involved in it, and he and his companions determined they were not going to defile themselves with the king's meat. You see, why would Daniel do that down in Babylon? Well, you see, Daniel, like Joseph, had a glimpse of the overall sovereignty of God in things. And Daniel knew that Babylon was only a temporary phase. That this was just a phase through which they were passing, and soon they would be returned to their land and their God and their temple and so on, and he was going to maintain everything exactly as it was as long as he was there. He knew that God had made covenants with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they were going to be fulfilled, and that they were not down in Babylon for the duration. And as we live our lives down here, we have to keep in mind the bigger picture, that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. And how we reckon ourselves here and how we behave ourselves here will determine our standing at that particular time. And of course, there's also a challenge to us on a very personal level. How do we behave when we are away from home? I'm talking about in the business level. I spent a great deal of time traveling around the country in planes and spending every other night in a different hotel when I was in the directorship of my corporation. And you're on your own, you know. How do you behave when you're on your own? Situations arise that you could compromise yourself, and there could be some real lucrative prospects could open up if you were just prepared to give a little bit and to, you know, just sort of lower your sort of level of display of your Christianity and so on. And in fact, let me say this, that the greatest challenges to anyone who is a Christian, isn't the pits of immorality. Most of us would never even be tempted by that sort of thing. But the greatest challenges that come to us from the highest levels of society. And I can remember well sitting in hotels at night, you know, when in business, and surrounded by some of the brightest brains that were in the country, and the conversation was just animated and great, and the food was good and all the rest of it. So easy just to sort of slip a little bit, you know? So easy just to let go. So easy to be enamored by the atmosphere and the camaraderie that is around the table. That is more subtle, you know, than the pits of immorality in any great city. We can be tempted like that. And Daniel was surrounded by, nobody was asking Daniel to do anything immoral in the sinful sense, but he was being tested as to the very foundations of his faith. The next thing I want you to notice, and time is marching on, is that Babylon decided that they would have to change their names. You see, when names were given in Israel, they always had a spiritual significance. And all of the names of Daniel and his companions were names that were glorifying to God, their God. And Babylon would not allow that to stand. They said, no, we can't have people running around called Daniel and Hananiah and Azariah and Mesiah. We can't have that, you know. So, they changed their names to reflect the glory of the gods of Babylon. For instance, Daniel means God is my judge. And his name was changed to Belshazzar, which means Bel, the god of Babylon, protect the king, the glory of Bel. Hananiah means the Lord is gracious. His name was changed to Shadrach, the command of Aku, one of the god, another god of Babylon. Mishael means who is like the Lord? Misach, the name he was given, means who is like Aku? Azariah means God is my helper. He was given the name of Abednego, meaning servant of Nego. Babylon was determined to change their identity. These young men, as they stood before Nebuchadnezzar, were reflecting the glory of a god that they didn't want to hear about. They wanted their gods to be glorified, and they wanted these young men to have names that would reflect that glory. You know, idolatry is very prevalent in primitive societies. And we smile at them, bowing down before their little wooden stock and one and another, and we feel we've come a long way from that. Let me tell you something. Idolatry is still very much alive in the great office towers and buildings of our society today. Oh, we don't bow down before wood and stone and all the rest of that sort of thing, but we have our idols. Wherever we have something that takes the place of God, or where God is being displaced, that is idolatry. Our time, our talent, our money belong in the first place to God, and if someone else is getting the first call on any of these areas, it is idolatry. Idolatry. In the prophecy of Isaiah, Jehovah comes out and he says through Isaiah, I am the first. I hope that's true in all our lives. I hope that we can say he is first in all of our lives. We must not allow the world to change our identity so that we are reflecting the glory of their gods and indulging in idolatry in a variety of subtle ways that we haven't even recognized. And all of it detracting from the glory of our God. I heard the story told about the late William Kelly of Early Brethren fame, one of the founder members of our Brethren Assemblies. Mr. Kelly was an outstanding academic in the classics. And he was offered the flattery of selection for a chair of classics in one of the universities in UK. And to their surprise and shock, Mr. Kelly declined. And someone said to him, Mr. Kelly, Do you know what you've done? You've turned down the opportunity to make a name for yourself in this world, in the world. Kelly said, which world? Which world? And that's where it really lies, doesn't it? For which world are we living? Are we living for that world which will be eternal? Or are we living for the brief span of our 70 years here, which will just be like a grain of sand on the ocean compared to the countless years of eternity stretching out before, the millions of years of eternity that will get stretched before us? For which world are we living? Kelly said, which world? Finally, the proof of God's pleasure. Daniel had a very good relationship with Melzar, the steward of the eunuchs. Interesting to notice that, isn't it? We mustn't get the idea that Daniel and his friends were just an awkward bunch, you know, and they were going to resist anything. We look at Joseph down in Egypt, and he found favor with Potiphar. Potiphar really liked Joseph. In fact, we were just saying yesterday after the meeting that we didn't think Potiphar believed his wife anyway. I mean, if a slave did what he was supposed to do in these days, he would have been executed. He wouldn't have been put in jail. And I think the word got around that Potiphar didn't really believe his wife anyway. What could he do? Couldn't take a slave's word against his wife. But here we have this situation here. And Joseph had found favor with Potiphar, and even when he went to jail, the Lord gave him favor with the keeper of the prison. So Joseph wasn't a surly sort of drag-your-feet type who was going to object to everything and anything that ever happened and be sour and surly and have a terrible disposition. No. Both these men had evidently developed a very sound character credit rating with their peers in Egypt and Daniel in Babylon. And Daniel had been brought into favor and tender love with Belshazzar. And when it came to the time when he needed a break, as it were, God used that situation to allow Daniel the liberty to refuse the king's meat. Listen, we must never underestimate the tremendous cost that Belshazzar paid. He wasn't a believer, you know. He had nothing at all to do with God or the God of Daniel. But he took his life in his hands by allowing Daniel to do what he did, because if it had got around and Daniel had turned out worse than the rest, he would have suffered. He would have had his head taken off. And this man was prepared to trust the God of Daniel in order to allow them to do that. And Daniel said, listen, let's give it a trial period, Belshazzar. Let's cut out all this fancy food from the king's table, and you give us some vegetables, and we'll see what happens at the end of the time. And you know, at the end of the time, we discover that they were in better physical shape than all the other princes of Egypt, of Babylon. And when it came to exam time, they passed with flying colors. In fact, did you notice what it says? They were 10 times better than all the others of Babylon. Now that's quite a credit rating, isn't it? You know, the first thing we want to learn from this is that we must not, as Christians, think that we have to go around with our faces tripping us, as we sometimes say, with a surly disposition and think that that's being spiritual, you know? We ought to be people who are attractive. I mean, Joseph was evidently attractive in Egypt, and Daniel, he was loved down in Babylon. And he was respected and admired down in Babylon. And we should develop a character credit rating with our neighbors and our friends that we can take advantage of in the gospel when it comes an appropriate time. The second thing that we want to learn as we close is that We ought to be prepared to trust God in a difficult situation. You see, Daniel was taking his life in his hands and his friends by refusing the king's meat. Because if, as I say, it was discovered at the end of the trial period that these young men had suffered in some way or other, or were ill-looking, or didn't look as good as they should, questions would have been asked, and they could have been executed simply because they refused the king's meat. But Daniel was prepared to trust God, even though he knew the possibility of consequences coming upon him. He said, well, the consequences don't really matter to me. The important thing is that I honor God and leave the consequences to him. And we'll see that coming up time and time again in Daniel. And he allowed that situation to go through. And he refused to eat the king's meat. And God blessed him for it. As I said yesterday, never be afraid to trust God. Never be afraid to put God and his claims and your commitment to him first in your life, and God will ensure that you will come out on top. 10 times better, it says, than all the others in Babylon. So, as we close and summarize, the first thing is that God may allow adverse circumstances to come into our lives, like Daniel, transported into Babylon. The fact that we are godly Christians won't exempt us from some of the more severe trials that can come into people's lives. God may allow severe trials to come into the life of people who are committed Christians and whose only desire is to serve him. Secondly, whatever happens, we have to have a clear grasp of the fact that things are not out of control, that God is working out his sovereign plan in our life. Thirdly, it is important to take a stand for God right at the very start of any new situation in our life, and to let it be known what we are and where we stand, and to refuse to be conformed to the world. We must resist the allurements that the world offers. Our conduct should be respected and trustworthy, and we should have a good character rating with the world around us. And we must never doubt the outcome of taking sides with God. God said through Samuel to Saul, that was referred to by our brother Jim the other day there, "Them that honor me, I will honor. They that despise me, I will lightly esteem." May God bless his word for his name's sake, shall we pray. Our gracious God and our Father, we would thank thee again for the example of this outstanding young man Daniel and his companions. We thank thee for their faithfulness, even although they were young. We thank thee for their tenacity and for their spiritual stamina that enabled them to stand amidst all the tremendous pressures of a Babylonian empire. We thank thee that amidst it all, they stood for God. Help us, our Father, as we stand in a world where compromise is looked on as being an admirable thing. Help us, our Father, to stand firm and dare to be a Daniel. Dare to stand alone. Dare to have a purpose firm and dare. We give thee our thanks. Bless us as we part, and just bring us again in a few minutes back to the blessing of thy word. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, amen. Amen.